Broadcasting in HD radio at 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, and KBDH San Ardo. Streaming live and podcasting at KUSP.org. Hey everybody, I'm Gary Shapiro, and it's time for From the Bookshelf. I'm pleased to welcome Diana Speckler back to the show. 3 or 4 years ago, Diana was in the studio with us and read a fine award-winning short story of hers at that time. She was the Steinbeck Fellow at San Jose State University. And tonight she joins us from her home in New York on the eve of publication of her debut novel, Who by Fire. Diana Speckler, welcome back to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So what have you been doing since you were in San Jose?
I've moved around a bit. When I left California after doing the Steinbeck Fellowship, I went to Rhode Island for a year and was writer-in-residence at a boarding school called Portsmouth Abbey. And then after that, I lived in North Carolina for a summer researching my second novel and then moved to New York City, and I've been here 2 years.
And your work has been published in the meantime in not just your novel, but have you had some stories published and so on?
Yeah, I have something coming out in Glimmer Train.
Mm-hmm.
And, off the top of my head, I'm not remembering what else I have coming out. Yeah, I've had a couple of short stories and essays here and there.
Well, let's talk.
But mostly I've been working on this novel and also the second novel.
Have you been working on them at the same time?
Well, I kept thinking I was finished with Who by Fire. I thought many times that I was finished with it. And, when I went looking for an agent, which was pretty soon after I left San Jose, I thought then that I was finished. So I was sending out a complete manuscript to agents. And then when I signed with my agent, she wanted me to do revisions, and that turned into basically 2 years of revisions. So I never, I thought so many times that I was done, and I never really was. And while I was still working on it, I went and did my research in North Carolina for the second one. And then there was a year where I was kind of doing both, finishing up the first and beginning the second. But it's really hard to switch gears. It obviously makes more sense to be just focused on one project at a time. And even since I've turned in or sold the novel, sold Who by Fire, there's been a lot of revision. And even after the revision was all done, now there's just so much to do for promoting it and all these other things. Every time I think, it's gone, it's not over. So the second novel actually gets put on the back burner more often than I would like.
Oh, well, let's talk about Who by Fire a little bit. So I'm going to let you tell us, since it's a novel and we don't want to give everything away, you tell us what you want us to know about it, and then we'll talk about it. So give us a little bit of what it's
about. Okay. You'd think by now that I would have a stock answer to this question, and I don't. I really should.
You can work on it.
Okay, but I'll try to work one out right now. It's a family story. It's set in 2002. Most of the scenes take place in Israel. It's about a family that had a tragedy 13 years ago, and now the three remaining family members are all sort of dealing with it in different ways. There's the mother, who is kind of lonely and, a little bit, over-involved in her kids' lives. And then there's her oldest daughter, Bits, who sort of a wild child. She's early 20s, living in Boston, working as a teacher. And her brother, Ash, who calls himself Asher, is an Orthodox Jew who dropped out of college and moved to Israel to learn in a yeshiva. And the story opens pretty much with Bits hearing about a suicide bombing in Jerusalem on the news. And she gets very upset, and her mother gets very upset, and they can't get in touch with Ash. And that's sort of the catalyst of the whole story. And the novel's told from all three of their perspectives.
So in the way that you tell the story from each perspective, you're actually, I guess, in a way, you're sort of an actress who's portraying these three characters. Yeah?
Oh, it's interesting that you say that, because I always have thought that if any art is similar to fiction writing, it's acting. Because, and I don't actually have very many friends who are actors, but the ones that I do know, it seems that there's a similarity in the way that they have to try to get into character all the time, and they're sort of always trying to pretend to be their character. And I found myself doing that a lot, especially with this project, because I was always switching voices. So it was almost like I was working on three projects.
So let me ask you, did you plot out your story first and then divide it up in this way, or what?
You know, I wish I was that kind of writer, but actually what happened was the plot came last. There's plot-driven fiction, and then there's character-driven fiction. And I think plot-driven fiction, you can sort of plot out exactly what's going to happen and then just sort of assign characters to do whatever it is that you want to happen in the story. And then the alternative is character-driven fiction, where you build your characters first, and then you sort of just let them go and see how they interact, and let the plot build as a result of their actions and interactions. And I'm more of the second kind of writer. I write character-driven fiction, so I think in character-driven fiction there's opportunity for plot, but in plot-driven fiction there's not as much opportunity for rich characters. So I prefer to, you know, I prefer to focus on the characters. Now, with that said, it would be very convenient if I was a person who could come up with good plots, but the plots take me forever. It's the hardest part for me, so it always comes last. And the first several drafts of this novel, I would print it out thinking I was, you know, I had something, and I would read it, and I would just think, okay, there's nothing going on. These characters are just walking around having thoughts and feelings, and that's not a novel. So, and actually, for many, many, many drafts, it was just Fitz and Ash. Ellie, the mother, didn't have a voice.
Oh, I see.
So that also came late.
That's interesting. So I was going to ask you, did you, like, write all of Bits's parts and then write all of Ash's parts and then all of the mother's parts?
Well, what I did initially was I wrote a short story when I was still a graduate student at the University of Montana. My last semester of school there, which was in 2003, I wrote a short story that was from Bits's perspective. This is how the whole thing started. And it was just about this girl whose brother was an Orthodox Jew in Israel, and she had heard about a bomb, and the whole story takes place while she's waiting to hear from her brother. And she never does. You know, at the end of the story, she's still waiting. So that was, that was just a story I wrote, and I thought that was it. And I published it and everything. I thought it was done, gone. But then that summer, when I graduated, I went to an artist colony in Minnesota for a month, and I sort of revisited that story, and I thought, I wonder what her brother thinks, and I started writing something from his perspective, and then it almost became like a dialogue. I would just go back and forth between them. So that was sort of how it was born, but like I said, even after I finished a draft of that, there was no plot.
Well, now, the sister is, I guess, the most like you, because, you know, she's a young woman, and so are you. And I think most people who read books think everything is an autobiography. So tell me, is there any of her in you, or you in her, I should say?
Yeah, you know, actually, at first I did relate to her the most, but by the end of the process, I found myself relating to Ash a lot more than I was relating to her. And I think, you know, yes, we're both young women, and actually we look alike, which is creepy, but but we're not the same. We're so different. We're such different people, and she's a lot more self-destructive than I am, and she's, and which on the flip side maybe makes her braver than I am, and she's more impulsive. So I think in those ways we're very separate. And also, and I do have a little brother, but my relationship with him is very different from her relationship with her brother. So.
And your family your family structure is not at all like this one. Your relationship with your parents.
It is in that same number of people.
Uh-huh.
But other than that, no. I mean, my parents are, you know, happily married. We haven't had any, thank God, any great tragedies in our little, you know, in our immediate family.
Yeah.
And we're all very close. And this is, so my family, I know that my mother would be very glad I'm clarifying this on the radio, that my family is not dysfunctional.
We'll send her
the family in the book. So.
We'll send her a copy of this. So, well, in the story, you say it's character driven, which it is, but also I think there's some things that you're trying to talk about. And I think maybe the primary thing is the lack of understanding of people. Is that why you are writing in individual voices that way?
I'm sorry. I'm not sure what you mean.
The way people, these three characters, have a sort of a lack of understanding of what's going on in each other's heads. The mother states, you know, they don't know me, and the Ash doesn't feel like his sister knows. They think like they know each other, but they really don't.
Right.
And is that, are you just talking about these three characters, or are you talking about the a larger public at large?
I mean, I think that everybody, that's actually a great question. I think that a lot of people walk around feeling misunderstood. I think it's a very common, part of the human condition. And there's actually a scene where Bits is in the elevator with two security guards who have just dragged her, who are dragging her out of an apartment building that she's not supposed to be in, and she says something about how no one understands her, and the security guard says to her, you know, everyone thinks that, but I'll tell you something I know because I'm old. It's hardly ever true. And I think both things are true. I think that nobody really understands. I think we do all misunderstand one another, but I think at the same time there are very basic things that we do all understand, and when we're trying to fool other people, we're not always doing a very good job. You know, so I think that part of why these characters keep saying, well, they don't understand me, is because, you know, and I think this is common in families, our families see things in us that we don't want to be, you know, and so the persona that maybe someone is trying to give off to the world is not the persona that their family members see, because family members know you the best. You know, maybe don't know you currently, but know you the longest.
Yeah, so. Know you the longest. We're talking with Diana Speckler, and my personal discovery, by the way, and her novel, which is about to be published, is called Who by Fire. It's coming out this week, and you should run out and get it and then read it on the beach. Do you care do you think about people reading your book and where they are when they're reading it and how fast it takes them to read it? Do you ever consider those things?
Yeah, of course. Like, if somebody tells me, you know, I started your novel and then I don't hear anything for a couple weeks, I get concerned. What I would really love the best is if someone said, I just started your novel, and then that night called to tell me, oh, I couldn't put it down and now I'm finished.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but it's, you know, it's strange because up until this point, it's just been people reading the galley, so it really hasn't, or the advanced reader's copy, so it's really, there really haven't been that many people who've read my book yet, and I know that it's just going to be, you know, more, it's out in the world now, which it's about to be, which is scary.
Well, I guess you could say it's finished then, you know, you won't be doing any more work on it.
Right, yes, it is finished.
It's absolutely finally finished now.
The writing part is finished. Yeah. I wouldn't say, you know, the promotional part goes on and on and on.
Right, and of course now you'll go around to bookstores and places, and people who have read the book will come up and connect with you. Are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, I love that part. I know a lot of authors are a little squeamish about it, but I love that part. I love meeting people. I love giving readings. I love meeting people who read, you know, not just who read my book, but just it's great to meet other readers. And ever since I sold the novel to my publisher, I've met a lot of writers, which has been fabulous. You know, it's just, it's like this little community that, I wasn't even really tapped into before. So I love all that stuff. I'm kind of too social for my own good, so.
Well, no, you set out to write a character-driven novel, but you've also written a novel that is very concerned with the conflict of religious and secular society. Is that something that has been of interest to you before this?
Yeah, definitely. I'm Jewish, and I've spent quite a bit of time in Israel. where the conflict between the religious Jews and secular Jews is pretty bad. And I think actually even outside of Israel, everywhere, I think a lot of Jews, you know, think that however they're practicing Judaism is the way to practice it, and anybody who is more observant is crazy, and anybody who's less observant is, you know, not honoring the tradition. I mean, I hear so much of that all the time. I'm not saying, you know, everyone does this, but it's definitely an issue that, it's an issue. So I don't want to say infighting, but there's conflict.
Well, Judaism, I guess, is the one religion that you can't walk away from. I mean, most people, when they become an adult, kind of decide for themselves how they feel about their religion. But you can say you're not Jewish and no longer practice, but that doesn't mean that you're not Jewish because of history, I suppose.
Right.
So where do you stand? Are you a religious person? You say you're Jewish. Does that mean you're a religious Jew? Do you go to temple and so on?
No, I'm not religious. I've probably been more religious at other times in my life, but right now I'm really not. I go to synagogue on the high holidays, and I get together with my family on holidays, and I like to learn about Judaism. I love studying it. I love the history. I love the culture. But I'm very, you know, very dedicated to it in that way, and I very much feel like a Jew. But as far as the religious aspect of it goes, I'm a bit agnostic.
So is your yeshiva conflict in the story, do you mean it as a metaphor for something else, or a political conflict of some kind, or is it just what it is?
Which conflict?
Well, I'm talking about the maybe there's a conversation where Asher's talking about spiritual danger. I'm thinking about society and about all of the influences on young people and things like that. Are you concerned with those as a metaphor, or I don't know exactly how to ask this question, obviously, or I would have asked it better.
I mean, I don't know that the yeshiva itself is so much a metaphor, but there's definitely one theme that I was trying to work a lot with was sort of being closed in and being closed out. And, of course, the yeshiva is a closed sort of community, you know, and it feels closed out a bit, and Ash feels closed in a comforted way. So those are some themes I was dealing with. You know, also there's a lot of separation in the novel.
By both distance and spirituality.
What's that?
By both distance and spirituality.
Yeah, you know, and then of course the line between, you know, there's that whole part, the line between Jerusalem and Bethlehem, the line between Israel and Lebanon, the distance that is formed among, you know, between the family members, all kinds of different examples of distance.
We're talking with Diana Speckler, and the novel we're talking about is called Who by Fire, and it's her first novel, but not her last, because she mentioned she's already working on her second one. So tell us a little bit about that. Are you allowed to talk? Do you don't let yourself do that?
I have, you know, sort of a one-sentence answer for this, because at this point it's still in very early stages, but it's a story about transformation through loss that's set at a weight loss camp for kids in North Carolina.
Oh, and so that's what you did, your research? You went to a weight loss camp?
Yeah, I worked at one for 10 weeks.
And what happened there? Was it fun?
Was it great?
Yeah.
I taught water aerobics.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was great. Had a great summer.
And I guess obesity is a big thing. I mean, there's a lot of obese people.
Yeah, there sure are. So, yeah, and, you know, weight loss camp is kind of a microcosm of the diet industry, I guess.
Yeah.
So,
So do you have a bunch of novels that are knocking around in your head, or what?
No.
I mean, you worked for years on this one, right?
I did. This is like my opus. Actually, people keep saying to me, it's your baby, and, I mean, it's actually, you know, it's more like a grown child at this point. Because I feel like I was working on it for so long. So, you know, and I think actually starting a new one is so daunting because I know what I'm getting into. You know, the first time around, I didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't know, oh, I'm going to be working on this for 4.5 years. This is what I'm going to be doing with my life for 4.5 years. Now that I know how long that one took and I don't foresee the next one, you know, being any easier, it's daunting to get started.
Yeah. But you now have a publisher who's interested in you since they published your first book.
Well, they bought the first one, but there's no guarantee about anything else. But to answer your question about do I have a bunch of other ideas, the answer is no. I was nearing the ending stages of novel number one when I thought of novel number two. And I think right now I'm just really focused on novel number two, and then, you know, hopefully another idea will crop up while I'm working on this one, but I'm not worried about it. I mean, I've never really been someone who doesn't have enough ideas.
Yeah.
It's never really the problem. Right now I'm just trying to focus.
What are your work habits like? You sit down every day and...
I try to sit down every day. Of course, there are days where it doesn't happen, like today, for example, because I was on an airplane for most of the day. But yeah, I try to at least, you know, actually even today I wrote a little bit, but, I try to at least work for, you know, some period of time every day. And I think, you know, if I were going to give a writer advice, you know, I would say, even if I don't always follow it, to try to write every day. It is important.
So when other little girls wanted to be an astronaut or a cowgirl, you wanted to be a novelist?
Actually, yeah, I did I don't know if I knew to call it a novelist, but... I knew I wanted to be a writer from, you know, the time I was a baby, and I used to write a lot of poetry that was terrible, and then started writing fiction towards the end of high school and just went from there, and then kind of did both for a while, and then, you know, gave up on the bad poetry. We all do. We all give up on the bad poetry eventually.
And so you also write short stories along the way. I mean, do you suddenly say, I have to set aside my novel because I have a short story that just popped into my head?
Yeah, and it's always so nice when that happens because it's not that they're easier necessarily, but they are a reprieve because there's like an end in sight when you're writing a short story. You know, it's kind of like punching it out. There's a concision to them that obviously a novel lacks. So I love writing short stories.
Well, Who by Fire seems like it's... It would be. It's a very cinematic kind of book. Do you think they'll make a movie out of it, or what do you think? Would you like to see?
I sure hope so.
Yeah, I mean
that would be great.
I mean, not just because of the financial reward, but you'd like to see a film of it.
Yeah, I would love to. I would totally love it. But you know, of course, those things are difficult to come by. But it would be great. Yeah, I can see it as a movie too, especially towards the end of the process. You know, when it became very visual in my own head, I was like, I really see this as a movie. But, you know, that's one of those maybe narcissistic delusions. I don't know. I'm prone to those.
I think it'd be a great movie myself.
Thank you.
I'll go. And the novel is called Who by Fire. The novelist is Diana Speckler. Diana, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it was great. Thanks so much.
That's all the time we have for From the Bookshelf this week, but we'll be back again next week with another great program. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org to hear this program or other episodes of the show that you may have missed. I want to thank our From the Bookshelf production staff, Miss Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work. Thanks, Breanne. For KUSP, I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening, everybody.